Okay, I guess we're ready to get started. Good in the back? Yep. Okay. Well, thank you for taking the time to come out this afternoon. Small room, because you promised to not take the whole time today. So my name is John Russell. I'm the solution manager for our Microsoft VDI solutions. We have Gennaro here as well. He's one of our solution engineers for VDI. So what we want to talk about today are the solutions we built around Microsoft Desktop Virtualization, both VDI, Terminal Server, some of the architectures we've designed around it, and more importantly, how we got to that. So there's many, many pieces in the world that make up a VDI solution, from server, storage, networking, and there's a lot of questions around the IOPS and the user experience. So we're gonna talk about our reference architectures, how we got to it. The best part we'll save for the last, which is actually a live demonstration. So we'll show you the pieces of Microsoft Server, we'll show you remote effects and how the user experience has changed over the last year, and kind of what people are doing with Microsoft VDI. Sound good? Any questions, please let us know. So we're part of the Dell Desktop Virtualization Solutions team. So what we do is we look throughout Dell, throughout the industry, for the best of breed, the best in class pieces to make a VDI solution. So Dell, of course, makes many, many servers, many types of storage, many pieces of networking, and there's lots of software pieces to choose from. But we pick the ones that are best for VDI, and then we build a reference architecture that we can kind of guarantee the performance of what it will deliver for VDI in your environment. Obviously, VDI is a very, very popular topic. So there's a number of sessions here. Microsoft has a session on VDI. A lot of customers are asking us about VDI. A lot of that's being driven from what we see from customers looking to save costs on desktop, enabling remote desktop, BYOD. So enabling access from other devices, iOS, iPads, Androids, things like that. The number of devices are going very, very quickly. So employees are being asked to bring in their devices to the environment, whether that's iPads or Androids or other, and still deliver those business applications. We'll actually show kind of a demonstration of how we do that in the marketplace. So we kind of have several forces driving the interest in VDI, which is the user choice. So there's many, many devices, very nice devices, XPS 12s, 18s, all these. It could be a MacBook Air, whatever it is, people wanting to bring different types of devices into the corporate environment. Well, IT still wants to maintain control and security. So how can I deliver an experience for this new type of user, but still maintain control of the applications, the data, make sure none of that information ever leaves my data center and ends up on that consumer or client-owned device? So VDI, what we've seen in the marketplace is that most projects that are successful have a business driver behind it. That could be an XP migration or a Win 7 migration towards Win 8. So how do you enable taking thousands of PCs or hundreds of PCs and their applications and make that easier, right? How do you make that work in a virtualized world? And we'll kind of demonstrate some of that. That could be improving efficiency, driving down costs. So instead of spending time on break fix for desktops and laptops, how do we get out of the business of managing endpoint devices with things we'll talk about like thin clients and zero client type devices that have no management. And of course, end user productivity, business continuity. So if they can't get to the device is broken, how do we keep them up and productive? Those are some of the drivers behind VDI, and when we see projects be successful in the marketplace, there's almost always a business driver behind it, other than just VDI is neat. VDI is an interesting technology. There has to be a business driver behind it. So when we build these solutions, there's many companies that can build out VDI solutions. We work very closely with Microsoft and our other partners, but we have kind of four key things when we build a VDI solution. We'll talk about what they are, but we want to make sure the end users are productive. So how do they get access to this environment from a multitude of different devices? How do we secure the data? So remote access with things like SonicWall and VPNs, this data on the servers. How do we ensure secure connections so that data never leaves that endpoint device that you're bringing into your environment? We want to make sure you're maximizing your IT investment so that spend that you're making delivers the most value for those dollars. So you're using your resources on more important projects than potentially break fix or endpoint desktop management. And we will make it as simple as possible to manage. So VDI can be very, very complex. There's a lot of pieces. Microsoft actually makes it very, very easy. And Gennaro will kind of give you a demonstration of how easy Microsoft has integrated the VDI portion into Server 2012. But we try to add on top of that with management tools, systems, reference architectures that make it easy to manage and deploy these types of VDI infrastructures. So we have four key offers in this market. A DVS simplified appliance. So a lot of customers come to us and say, too complex, make it easy. I just want to plug something in and go. So we offer what we call a DVS simplified appliance. It's an all-in-one box, which has your VDI infrastructure. It's based on Citrix VDI in a box, but everything's self-included. Storage, CPU, networking, all built into one appliance and runs about 150 users. And if you need another one, you got another appliance and another appliance. Very, very simple architecture. Not necessarily right for enterprises, but small deployments. Very, very easy to deploy in your environment. We have what we call our enterprise infrastructure, which we'll go through a good example of. And then we can also deliver as a service. So if you stop by our booth, you may have seen us demonstrating our DVS desktop as a service. So we can actually manage the desktops, deploy the desktops, keep them up to date for you. Well, you can have your data, we can bring in your data, however you want to do that, we can tie into your data center, but we can manage and host virtual desktops for you in our environment. So for $30, $40, $50 a month, depending on the what you want to bring with it, if you want a client with it, we can deliver you a virtual machine, a virtual desktop that we'll host, manage, and maintain. All you do is tell the user where to go. Right? So it can be from an appliance to a full solution, which we'll describe, all the way down to just write a check, and we'll give you a virtual machine every month for your end users. We've been through a lot of VDI projects, and we'll kind of touch on some of the things that we've seen. We've been doing this for a number of years. The most successful projects kind of follow this process. VDIs are interesting. A lot of customers have pilots around it, 10 users, 50 users. A lot of those pilots fail, whether that's because of lack of planning or an application didn't work, whatever it is. What we find is we walk a lot of customers through the VDI process and what we think is the right way to go from an idea to a concept all the way to a deployment. And what we find is not everybody's right for VDI. VDI is not the solution for every single end user in your environment. What we find is we kind of start with a half-day assessment. So what are you trying to accomplish? What we talked about, what are your business goals? What do your end users expect and want? What is your budget? What kind of experience do you want to deliver to the end user? Is VDI right for you? And a lot of times the answer is no. It may not be right. A laptop, a notebook, some other device may be the perfect device for you. And a lot of customers, the answer is yes, it could save you some money, and we'll do a TCO analysis, those types of things. But we walk customers through this process to ensure that VDI is right for them. And then, of course, it's deployed appropriately in their environment. There are a lot of devices. We're Dell. We make a lot of different, what we think are fantastic and interesting devices, from traditional desktops and notebooks, OptiPlex, Latitude, to our newer tablets, which you may have stopped by and seen, our XPS 10, the XPS 12, some fantastic mobile devices. And then, of course, the acquisition of Dellwise. So Dellwise is now part of Dell. And the worldwide leader in cloud client computing and thin client devices, add a lot of value to the VDI stack outside of just being a thin client. Minimal maintenance, minimal management, very, very low cost, fantastic experience. And we'll talk a little bit about the Wise devices as well. So a lot of customers ask, well, how do I deploy it? What are the right ways? What should I go do with VDI? In a lot of cases, customers just want to buy a thing that's predefined, pre-built, and then delivered. So we offer that now with our active infrastructure, which is kind of one of the highlights of the session, is that a lot of customers said, I can get all these pieces, these servers, these storage, the networking, I can cable it, I can load it. I don't know what's exactly best for me. How do you make it easier? And that's why we developed the active infrastructure portfolio, the AS20, or the AS50, 200, 800, 1000. Those platforms are pre-built, predefined, pre-configured for these types of workloads. So if you say, I just want to deliver 250 users, what do you have for me that can do that? The active infrastructure portfolio is pre-built, rack configured to deploy in your environment today. And we offer that for different VDI solutions right now. We have DVS Enterprise, which is more of our custom solution. So we go through, find out exactly what you're trying to deliver, and we design an architecture based on our reference architecture that we'll talk about that meets your requirements for VDI. And then we do fully custom. So customers who want to bring their own storage, their own networking, maybe it's EMC or NetApp, they want to bring their own networking, maybe that's Cisco, we support that. Right? And so our reference architectures are very, very flexible in the devices that we allow you to bring into that architecture. We're Dell. We obviously like the pieces that we put together. We understand customers aren't all Dell shops necessarily. Around active system, one of the other pieces is simplifying deployment. So instead of just giving you a bunch of blank servers and chassis and shoving them all in, we actually have software that will automate the deployment. So Active System Manager can actually automate the deployment of new blades using templates. So once you create your preferred version of a template for a blade, let's say you wanted to load Server 2012 with Hyper-V in a specific configuration, it becomes intuitive. So you can capture that template, and when you plug in a new blade to that environment in the future, it can automatically deploy that workload. And you plug in another one, it can automatically deploy that workload. So the big benefit around ASM is that it allows you to automate deployment of new hardware and then manage the deployment of that hardware. So a lot of the other piece that customers come to us a lot is, where do I start? Where do I start with VDI? I can take these old pieces of hardware and software, I can test it. What we found is when you use some of the older hardware, two generations old, Intel CPUs, older memory technology, the information you get from your POC may not apply to what you're trying to do in the future. So we've seen a lot of POCs fail simply based on the hardware, using old hardware that doesn't perform well, that gives a bad experience, and they go, VDI is horrible, the performance is bad. In a lot of cases, it's because of the hardware that was selected. I'm trying to use unoptimized or non-optimal hardware for your testing. So what we recommend for customers that are doing a pilot is to get some modern hardware dedicated for VDI. We've done sizing on the T110, so it's a simple kind of tower server that you can put about 10 users on. It's modern technology that gives you a good experience for VDI. So one way, if you just want to do a quick pilot in a box, test it out, the T110 tower servers are fantastic. We can even preload it with the software from Microsoft. So you just set it up, we have the instructions, and you go. And they're very, very easy to test Microsoft VDI, show internal users, show internal groups how what VDI looks like. It feels like it's pretty portable. We kind of carried one very, very similar with us to this show today to show you Microsoft VDI. You've probably heard a lot about Vertex. I don't know if anybody's stopped by and seen the Vertex platform, but very, very interesting solution that we're launching in the marketplace, available very, very shortly, a couple days. What Vertex does is take that concept of in a box to the next level. So I'll refer to it as data center in a box. So your networking, your storage, up to 4 blades in one chassis. And we actually are going to add this to our reference architecture very, very shortly. It's a fantastic solution for Microsoft because of the clustering of the storage. But you can get 500, 600 users on a box that can sit under a desk. Right? That's imagine taking 600 desktops and deploying those all over your office space versus that one chassis with thin clients. So you can actually load your entire data center in that box, run it on regular power under a desk, and you can have 600 virtual machines, 500 to 600 virtual machines, depending on the user. You can even add graphics card to the solution, right? And we'll show some of the GPU offload. But Vertex is a fantastic solution for Microsoft because everything just fits in that one box right there. And then we have our scalable pods, so you can look at an active system if you want something that can scale. So I want to add another active system and another active system, another chassis as I grow. Vertex can't necessarily talk to each other because of the storage as you grow. Kind of caps out at 600 users for Microsoft. You can add more, but they won't talk to each other. Active system can be scaled and keep growing. So come some easier deployment methods. A lot of customers said, what's the easiest way to deploy VDI? Make it easy for me. We kind of define that for the different size solutions. So that's the end of the marketing slides. I promised to keep it brief. Happy to answer any questions. What we want to get into now is to talk about our reference architecture, what we built, and why we built it that way. So it's built on Dell hardware, obviously, but the information that's collected is applicable to anything. So if you want to build it on HP or IBM, whatever that is, the information is still valuable. We've been doing VDI for over this specific solution group for 4+ years now. We deployed tons of customer studies about VDI. So everything that we've learned, we put into these reference architectures. We can share that with you. We can show you the links for the reference architectures and kind of what we built. But with that, I'm going to hand it over to Gennaro to talk about it.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Gennaro Scudero. I'm a solutions engineer in Dell Spain, so excuse my Spanglish. But I'll try to bring down to earth what the marketing people always say, because we're used to many different VDI projects, and we know how the end user experience counts. In the last years, we've been moving or shifting from a typical VDI solution for, simplifying your management, making it easier. We're always telling you that you can reduce costs, but now we're seeing more and more new use case scenarios like bring your own device. So it's VDI itself is becoming a bridge technology from the legacy world that we had with old Windows applications to the new world with more touch-based kind of devices. So today we're going to see more or less an overview Microsoft has made with 2012. Much easier and powerful, I would say, the VDI solutions, remote desktop services solutions, and also seeing how we configure and we proved and tested our own solutions on our own hardware, and at the same time doing all that hard work for you so you don't have to spend a lot of time deciding or sizing your platforms and being sure that you will be delivering the right performance. So what are our design goals? What are we taking in account to do these designs and solutions? First one is important, simplifying the way, not just how you administer it, that's part from the Microsoft side, they are making it much simpler and easier, but also on the hardware side. So sizing VDI sometimes requires not just theory, but also experience, because it's very difficult, I always say, if you're virtualizing servers, those are closed environments. A database server or email server, what it does, what it requires. But VDI, it's you dealing with users. You don't know whether a user is using this or that application, or the way they're using them. So VDI, it's more, if you want, more challenging when you design. So we try to simplify. We try to standardize. In Dell, we always say our solutions are open, because in terms of we're using open standards, so software that you can find everywhere, you can put on servers, on hardware that we recommend you to use. And that's why we also say flexible, because our reference architectures are obviously based on our best hardware and best performance, but not close to that. We recommend you, if you already have your storage and you don't want to spend more money and different cheap, so in other words, we can say that we are saving your investment. We want you to use what you have and at the same time get the best results and performance. Scalable solutions, highly scalable solutions. This is a tricky word, because sometimes you say, okay, I can just go and scale them up and have, if I had 100 VDI users, I now want to go to 200. But sometimes that's not the case. You're not just scaling up the whole infrastructure. You just need some more storage, or maybe you need more network performance, or maybe just more CPU or graphics performance. So it's important to design to make it in a right way, in a layered way, so you can scale what you need to scale up. So for example, if you need more storage, you just need to put more storage into your environment without having to go again over the whole configuration or changing the other parts. So that's very important when you're designing scalability. And obviously, the cost. VDI has been very challenging in the last years because of the cost. I've been many times with customers saying, hey, you know, we are comparing, we're paying you a desktop or a laptop or whatever for 600 euros, 700, 400 euros sometimes, and now you're coming with, we are seeing VDI solutions. It requires minimum two servers, big storage, very powerful, you know, because you require high performance, and it comes up to 2,000 euros per user, per desktop. That's crazy. That's not going to work. Well, you will see now that it's a different story. It has changed. We have been spending a lot of time, effort, and working on trying to bring that down. So that's no longer the case. And I think it's important for everyone to understand. So you can, and believe us, you can go to our stand and see it by yourself. Like, we can offer solutions at the same price as a normal desktop right now. So you can start building VDI solutions, full complete solutions for a user at 400, 500 euros per user per seat on VDI solutions. That's very important. So to have a common understanding, I don't know if you're experienced or not with VDI, remote desktop solutions, so let's just understand the roles a little bit, because it will help with any VDI solution, I would say. The first role, the connection broker, that is the, I'd say it's a traffic agent. That's the one in charge of deciding where connections go, which resources are available. So it's important. So it's the role that knows where the how to manage the whole infrastructure in terms of providing the service to the user. So if you're opening a desktop, for example, you're disconnecting, you go and reconnecting later on, someone has to know where your session was running and how to reconnect you back to that. So the broker is the key point. You, all VDI solutions, regardless which manufacturer it is, you always find a connection broker there. Web access, that is just providing a web interface to users to make it simpler. They open up a portal and they can see what resources are published and available to them depending on their permissions and access. Some users, you can make them see more resources, more applications, more desktop. Other users would just see a few of them, depending on how you configure that. Gateway, that role is if you want external access for outside your firewall, your corporate firewall, that's just tunneling the RDP connection, the remote connection, remote protocol connection over HTTPS. Obviously, if you are connecting from outside the firewall, you don't want to open your firewall to many different connections, so you have to concentrate. You have to tunnel them in a using the gateway role. Licensing, nothing I can say. Without licenses, you can run anything in this world, so obviously that is the role taking care of your licensings and concurrent or not. You remember Or better, you know how you can license this type of solutions. It can be either on the device or the user, depending on what your use case scenario is. Sometimes the easy rule to understand that is if you have one machine and many people using that machine, device license would be the option. Whereas if you have one person and many devices, you should go for a user-based kind of licensing. And now the two roles, and you'll see in a second what different flavors, what kind of solutions you can provide. You have the remote desktop virtualization host, basically in Hyper-V and hypervisor machine providing the virtual desktops, the one running the virtual desktops that you're serving, and the session host, that is for, in old words, the terminal server or terminal servers where you can either publish shared desktops or applications, shared applications to your users. So by understanding that, you can see what kind of resources or different options you can provide to your users from a Microsoft-based solution. You have shared sessions, pool desktops, or personal VMs. What's the difference? Shared desktops are obviously, if you see the cost, it's the most effective solution. And you will see how you can have more density of users on a server, on a physical server, by providing shared sessions. And that is a perfect solution for standard task worker, basic workers. You provide an office, for example, you're not looking for high-level solutions. Or sometimes you may require different, for example, you need to be administrator of your own machine, or you want to install your own software, or you want to isolate because you're running some kind of application that may consume more CPU than others. You don't want to bring down the whole server and affect other users. Then you go for a pool of personal VMs. So it gives you more personalization and more isolation depending on what the solution. But you can choose and you can provide all three different flavors, as I said. So how does it work? Very quickly, I don't want to bore you with too technical ways, but basically you have your user connecting to the interface, to the portal. Remember, that's just doing the authentication and providing you and showing from the connection broker. It's asking the connection broker, hey, this user, what is available to him? What applications, desktop he can use? So that is the information rendered for you on the portal, what you see as a user. So you select the one you want, and then you establish, and see, this is very important, you establish a direct connection, an RDP connection, to the broker again. The broker authenticates the user and see where is that application or desktop available, and serves you from the pool of hosting servers and virtualization servers or sessions that you have. So you see what I was saying before. This is okay in a local network, so within the firewall, because you open in different ports. You can see you're going from your client to the broker, to the portal, and also to the back end running your applications. But in a one scenario, on a wide area network, that won't be the case. You don't want to be opening all those ports to the user. So what you require is that extra role, the gateway, that is basically the same flow, but it's now tunneling all your connections. So everything is coming on a encrypted, secure way, HTTPS, 443 is the only one that you have to provide to the world, and all connections are going through that one to the back end and opening your applications. So what was our architecture and what we want to show you here? Again, you can go over the numbers, make your sizing, but it has to work, and it has to be proved and tested to come and say to the people, hey, don't worry, if you use this and this and that, it will work, and it will provide a good end user experience that what you're looking for, what you probably want to assure to your users. We were taking, and also as what you can see here are the different layers that we are using in our solution. So we're coming from the networking layer, so with providing our best products for networking at the same time, but we, again, we're using flexible and open reference architecture. So we are telling you, this is what you should have. And if you choose, if you want to use Dell hardware, our 410, for example, family of switches are perfect for that job. And we have tested them, and we can also come to you with the best hardware that you can use. Our rack servers for performance, and you will see in a second, and this is the key point why we are now able to say that VDI solutions are no longer very expensive solutions that doesn't make sense compared to the standard client world, the standard desktop. Why? Because see the number of hard drives that are included in the server. And that is the trick. That is the difference. But I'll come back to in that in a second. Equilogic, our storage. Equilogic is iSCSI. There's been long, long debates about iSCSI, fiber optics, performance, IOPS, etc., etc. Well, we're not saying, hey, you should try this. No, we're saying, we have tried that. We have tested that. And we can assure you that you have enough IOPS to run the solution perfectly well. Of course, the new VRTX boxes, I love them because they are probably building blocks, easy to see. So it's like it's actually four servers, a storage in one box, but you can see it as a super big server, a lot of CPU power there, memory, and storage, all in one box, all configured and ready to go. And finally, the clients, apart from the standard PC laptops you know from Dell, we also including the Wise family now. So this is a thin client or a zero client. So zero client means zero management. I always say to my customers here, this is like a TV box. So you don't need to worry about configuring or imaging this. Just bring it out the box, plug it in, turn it on, and you're up and running. Nothing else to do. Of course, you have to configure the backend properly, but this is the concept. So practically nothing runs here. It's a clever client, and you can also manage them from the cloud as well, and really powerful. I don't know, John, if you want to add something else in here, but basically that's the architecture we follow for the hardware. And as I was saying, how to lower the cost, how to make this a more compelling solution at the same time, provide this, the good performance and at the low price. And to me, this is one of the most important differences and changes in the last years. Now we can provide performance IOPS, if you want, in a more technical term, from the servers themselves. So we can have put local storage on the servers and as a tier one storage. So high performance, running VMs from there. You go for a more distributed architecture. So think of VDI or shared desktops. They are, in essence, distributed application architectures because you have no one, you have many pooled desktops, or you have, again, cloned shared servers running on different physical servers. So you no longer need, actually, those servers to be live migrating from one machine to another because it's a server fails or goes down. You can open up very quickly a session from another one. What is important is the user data, the user documents, etc. And that's what you put on a tier two kind of storage. You can use any file server storage that you have to do that. So you can really go for a very flexible, low-cost solution for VDI that will bring you with even replacing a standard desktop with a thin client for the same price. So you can say to someone, hey, give me your desktop, I put you this thin client, and for the same price, you have a virtualized VDI solution up and running. In this, what we wanted to tell you and the architectures we were testing, we started from a very low end. So if you want to, for example, go for a 10 user for a proof of concept, if you want to start and say, hey, I'm not that sure, because it's not just about putting a VDI solution, but it's also seeing what is the user experience, what they say about using this kind of technologies. You can start from a really low 10 user solution with one server, it's a T110, so it's not high expenditure, and running, you see here, 4 hard drives, more than enough and good. You probably can even go a little bit more, but that would be perfect for a starting point for a proof of concept solution. Our pod, this one can go up to 200 sessions, 260 sessions on share sessions on Windows Server, or look at up to 150. I'll come back to Windows 8, but 150 Windows 7 solutions on one server. So look at this, and this is the rule that we use with customers, saying, hey, you want how many seats you want to provide? And they say, well, something about 200 Windows 7 desktops. And that's the rule of thumb. So you have one server, one R720, that's a rack server, with 96 gigabytes of RAM if you're providing share sessions, and 192 gigabytes of RAM if you're providing VDI, and hard drives inside the server. So that's what I was telling before. So you don't need super high-end storage. You just can run tier one virtual machines from the server. But you still need another management server for your infrastructure, broker, web, the web role, the web portal, and all the other licensing, et cetera, et cetera. They're all roles required in the solution. And an Equalogic, this is our, I wouldn't say it's starting, but one of our storage Equalogic with 12.1 terabytes. So you have more than enough space, obviously, depending on the volume you want to provide to your users. But this is tier two. So you'll be running the infrastructure virtual machine from here. Those are static, well-known servers, so you don't require like very high IOPS in there, plus the user data. And look at this, because I think it also makes a huge difference in the VDI world and the cost and providing these solutions. Now with Windows 8, Windows 8 is even more virtualization aware, so it's more optimized for virtual environments. And you on the same hardware, it's important, on the same hardware, you can grow up to 30. So it's not double, but a lot more virtual desktops on the same hardware if you're using Windows 8. So without expanding or putting more hardware there, which I think is really important. And what about if you want high availability? And also see that we're using, again, the same kind of servers, etc. Like in the airplanes, if you want high availability, you need to duplicate things. You have to have two of each. So in case one fails, you have another. So basically, that's the idea. You're having two servers and duplicating roles. You're using SQL mirroring, clustering, etc. So to provide the extra capacity you need for high available scenarios. And again, we're not going to very complicated, complex scenarios for virtualization. It's different story on the servers that you want to live migrate. You want HA to be on the server, so if one goes down, you can run from another here. We're just duplicating capacity. That's what you're looking for. So there are five easy steps that you can configure if you want high availability on your VDI scenario. Graphics. Now it's becoming more and more important. I would say not 2 years ago, but a year ago, it was difficult to provide good graphic performance with VDI. So you could do it. There are solutions that can provide GPU power, but those were very expensive. So it didn't make sense. You could even just give a powerful workstation for half the price or less that you were creating a virtual one. But now with RemoteFX, what Microsoft is doing is virtualizing the GPU, not the CPU only, but the GPU. And that gives you the option to provide good end, high graphics to your users on a shared GPU. How you do that? Well, also manufacturers are AMD or NVIDIA are coming with cheaper, if you want, graphic cards with more GPU power. And you have like two different levels. So if you require medium graphics or really high graphics to your users, if you want to provide them, for example, for AutoCAD or OpenGL or DirectX solutions base. And if you're not familiar with what we're talking here is, until now, think of a standard server doesn't come by default with a powerful graphic card. Nobody needed that. It was just a server, so nobody was using that as a workstation. But now, because we're doing virtual desktop on that server, we need some graphic power. Standard solutions on the they simulate the graphic card, so they're doing software processing to do all the mathematics to render, you know, polygons and all the stuff. But if you put some extra hardware in the graphic cards like this one, providing GPU, what you're doing is you're offloading that process to the hardware, so it's much better. But you still have the remote protocol, so you still need to bring that, because you may have the most powerful server with the most powerful GPU, but if you're rendering that at the server and just bringing the screen, the bitmap to the user, the experience will be very, very bad anyway. So it's important. And you can see here the different options you have now, for example, in the market with up to two GPUs, but look at the cores and the number of memory, and the video memory is critical also, as you will see in the demo. And this is a good table and example on how you can size and understand that, because before you had to take into account CPU, RAM, and storage, obviously, IOPS. But now if you want to bring high graphics to the end users, there are more things to have in account, not just the size of the screen resolution that you will be providing, the number of monitors, and this is key to the, because that's a minimum memory, the minimum video RAM, again, no, the RAM on the server, the RAM in the graphic card, that you have to ensure that you have for the virtual machines. If you don't have, for example, if you've given a 1600 by 1200 resolution virtual desktop to user, and you don't reserve that 120 megs, or you don't have those 120 megs on the video card, it won't start. So it's important that when you're doing your sizing, you understand also the bottleneck there. So you have to have enough video memory for your virtual desktops. So how we were measuring this, because I can tell you I can be here telling you different ways of sizing this, but we actually wanted to prove it. We wanted to see whether it was true or not. What was the bottlenecks, the thresholds numbers, the maximum capacity we can bring up these configurations. And to do that, we were measuring, and this is also important, there are tools like LoginVSI that generate the workload. In many, many projects, one of the common failures is administrators or engineers or technical person that is building the solution, they come with this is a server, storage, all parts, this is your solution. But when they're testing the solution or piloting the solution, it's never the real number that you will be running with all your users. So when you go into production, and you can go from maybe 10 machines that you were testing to 100. It's a complete different scenario from storage, from server capacity. So it's important that you do some characterizations. You also do some measuring. LoginVSI is a software that generates and emulates that, so you can define different profiles, you can different workloads, you can say, okay, I have a basic user, I have a task worker, and it'll be running for this long and opening different programs, and you want to see that in the real world. But also, you need to measure what is the end user experience. So we also use different scenarios and tools like LiquidWare, for example, that will provide us measures like CPU memory on the different machines, and also performance counters to see the actual real end-user experience, because humans are very sensitive to that. And you don't forget it, in some cases you're removing from a user a powerful desktop. Now desktops come with a lot of memory, plenty of storage, and you're providing a different solution, so you have to make sure the experience is at least similar to what they are used to. So these are the different profiles, the different workloads we were testing. Basic, standard, and premium users are basically like any of us, just running standard software, I would say, but some users open a lot of applications at the same time, other users just maybe one or two applications. Many of us are running just email, for example. And also premium and heavy users, those GPU-assisted roles or profiles are more common now, but not in the past. We typically were just using basic, standard, premium in our tests. But now it's important to also go for the graphic experience. And here what I was telling about the tools. So we were not just doing the workload simulation with tools like LogInVSI, but also doing the end user experience monitoring. LiquidWare is a fantastic, great tool for measuring what is going on the machine, on the client, on the virtual machine. So seeing CPU, how CPU is going, what memory is, if it's slow or not, if you have a lot of latency on the network. And again, don't forget that you have two components. It's not just the virtual machine itself, it's also bringing that virtual machine to where the user is. So sometimes the virtual machine runs okay, but the latency in the network is not good enough, and that provides a poor user experience. And we are also adding some performance counters to measure even better what was the frames per second in video. That's very important. It has to be something around 30 frames per second to user say, okay, this is an acceptable video experience. If there are some tests on the web that you can see on your own computers, you will have even more than that frames per second. So imagine 30 frames per second now with high graphics, with a lot of pixels, a lot of information coming to you. So it's really important that you measure in a proper way. And GPU-Z is another tool to measuring frames per second and that kind of graphic performance. So what were the findings, the results? And again, we've been doing all this just to come and say, hey, this is the right hardware. We tested it. We know how it works. We know how it performs. This is the configuration. You see we're using one of our rack servers, 720, on a bringing 150. That was the limit that we found on this configuration. 192 gig of RAM. So if you remember when we were telling the architecture, so one server with this configuration of hardware can give you up to 150 users running okay. Why? Because as you can see, and you can concentrate, you see when the login state, obviously, when machines are starting, be careful, it's different starting booting up a machine than logging on the machine. The login is the actual time when you are entering your credentials and logging on the computer, and they're bringing in step of 10 by 10. But the important measure here is the steady state. That's where users will stay for the period of time that they're working. And as you can see, CPU is being around 80% on this configuration. So we can see on that hardware, we were not going higher than 80% and very stable, running 150 users. And on this basic load, so these are standard office, if you want users, no power users. Obviously, if you want power users, it would low down that number. It would probably be around 100, 110. It's still very, very good. And this is also causing a lot of debate when people are sizing these kind of scenarios. They say, oh, remember what I said, IceCast is good or not. IOPS, we need a lot of IOPS. I've heard different, very different concepts on that. For example, and this is an interesting thing that not too many people know, that when you are sizing storage IOPS performance for servers, sometimes you count 50-50 write versus read IOPS, or even 60-40, things like that. In VDI, it's 80-20 or 90-10 the difference. So it's 80 to 90% write IOPS versus read IOPS, 10-20%. Because it's an operating system running a client operating system, Windows 7, Windows 8, writing a lot of things, caching, doing a lot of processes on the machine itself, times the number of machines that you're running there. So also the number of servers you're running is higher. But even so, look, our findings were about average 1,500, so 1,500 IOPS for all 150 users. So it's about 10 IOPS per user. And that's a very good number. You find out sometimes something in between 6 to 12 as a good number to measure that. 10 is an average that can help you understand and see. We were plenty of IOPS, so no problem there. And also the bandwidth is another interesting 18 megabits per second. That's another magic number that typically users are looking for to understand, because obviously putting these kind of solutions brings some impact on your network. Although I have to say that nowadays more impact is causing the bring your own device effect, because you were from a Wi-Fi connection of one user maybe in the past, one device per user, now you go to up to 3-4 devices per user, so probably you may have problems in some different area. And this is the same but running share sessions. So instead of running VDI, when I'm saying VDI, I'm understanding one virtual machine per user. So you have 150 virtual machines, one for you, so different users. Whereas if you're running shared desktops, that is much more effective and sometimes more than good enough, because if you want just to provide Windows with Office, for example, you don't need actually run 150 machines. You can run 4 machines. This is what you can see here. Half the memory, look, 96 gig instead of 196, and provide a similar, practically the same user experience. So as a user, what you see is a Windows running Office. You don't need more. And look at the IOPS. Practically nothing compared to the other solution. So on the similar hardware, less memory, 4 virtual machines, providing up to 260 sessions with a good user experience. So just make the numbers. One server, more memory, 150 users, same server, less memory, 260 users for a Windows and Office, for example, typical configuration. So that brings numbers really down, and not running on local storage. And graphics, as we were saying, and we'll see in a second on the demo, graphics, it's as I said, it's not just important what you're doing on the server itself, but also bringing that over a remote protocol to the user. As you can see here, the important findings, and that's 30 frames per second is your goal. That's what you, below that number, user would say that it's not working. It's slow, or you're missing frames, or the experience is just not acceptable. But you can see the red input frames per second are higher than the black output frames per second, because the machine itself, the virtual machine itself, is delivering more frames per second. But again, on top of that, you have to take into account the remote protocol. So what you actually bring into the user is lower than that. So you have to ensure both at the same time. So that's why it's not just about putting a powerful graphic card on the server, but also the remote protocol, remote FX in this case, bringing that experience to you, bringing the frames that you require to use. So just to give you again a summary of the findings and what you can do, or how you can scale up different sessions on different solutions. You remember our base deployment pod, the 10-user POC, you with one server, with one compute host, you can go up to 10 sessions, virtual desktops, and you go down to very scalable deployment or base deployment pod with two servers, up to 260 sessions if you're doing shared sessions, or 150 Windows 7 virtual machines, or 230 Windows 8 virtual desktops. And I would say this is a very interesting result that you can have, because if you, you know, licensing is another topic. We could spend another morning just talking about licensing in these scenarios. And that's important to know as well. So the key takeaways, the key messages that we want you to take from these sessions are here. So always optimize. End user experience is the key word in any VDI remote desktop deployment solution project. That is essential. If you don't, I've seen many times, if you don't perform, if you don't provide a good end user experience for all your users, you can forget. You're going to fail in your project. So that's why network performance and taking account all the different layers, all the different parts, so you're not just about servers, it's not just the client, but it's all of them, network, servers, storage, and clients conforming the solution. Software GPU, now becoming more and more important, but now we have solutions. Now we have a way to provide good experience. Sometimes you don't need it, or you can combine. You don't need to buy all servers with high graphic cards. You can have some. Remember, you can configure. You can give some users standard desktops, shared desktops, maybe other users. You can provide high-end graphics available virtual machines. And of course, always test. And this is not just obvious, but it's also a requirement, because no all applications perform the same way. And sometimes applications, the way they are programmed, designed, will bring different results. So test, of course, is always the best recommendation that we can have. So, and in the future, I think you can, Jen, talk about our future and what we are.
So some of the things we're working with Microsoft on, Gennaro talked about Windows 8 and the improvements for VDI. So that density improvement for Windows 8 is something we've worked with Microsoft on. We've both seen improved. That significantly reduces the cost of VDI while still delivering the exact same experience. So we're continuing to test that. We'll have a reference architecture here shortly that talks in specific details about Windows 8 and the solution built around it. We're adding support for Office 2013. So one of the changes with 2013 is very GPU heavy. So those GPUs that Gennaro talked about in that experience, it actually offloads a lot to your GPU. So even on a desktop or a notebook, you're actually utilizing your GPU for Office now, whereas before it was pretty much almost all software. We're working with Link. So I don't know if any of you are using Link today in your environment, but Link 2010 in a VDI environment was not a good thing to attempt in most cases. Microsoft's worked some fantastic improvements around Link and the VDI optimizations, and we're adding that to our solution as well, and sizing it. So there can be impacts for when you bring Link into your environment, the clients that you're going to choose. So how does your client support Link if you're going to use a thin client? So we're working with Microsoft and solutions around Link 2013 very shortly. Obviously, we've added support for ModeFX, and we'll show that. And then we talked a lot about Vertex, and there's a lot of interest in the Vertex platform. It's a very interesting choice for Microsoft, especially around the size. And we talk about scale. We see the Microsoft solution going in the 600 to 1,000 seats. It can go bigger with scripting, and we've done some joint reference architectures with Microsoft up into the thousands. But kind of 600 to 1,000 is a really, really good fit for a Microsoft-type VDI solution, and that platform fits it almost perfectly in a lot of cases.
Yeah, and let me just say two things from the engineering part. Office, we were saying now with Windows 8, you can have more virtual machines running on the server, and be careful. Office 2013 requires more CPU. That's what we also have seen in our test, up to 20% more than Office 2010. That is important, because you will say, hey, that guy told me that I can go with more Windows 8, but now my experience is not as good as he said. But be careful with that. Office 2013 requires more CPU, more power than previous versions. And regarding Link or regarding voice over IP, that's another typical question from customers. They want to run voice over IP. I always say, well, when you're on a physical traditional environment, your cell phone, your your voice over IP client connects straight to the voice over IP server to make the connection, and then connects to the other endpoint that you are talking to. So, for example, if you have a voice communication or even a video, even worse, on a virtual environment, everything goes through the virtual platform. So you go into your broker, etc., to your platform there. And so that's why, in the past, the experience was not good enough. Now Microsoft is improving, and also there is a plugin that you can install here, and we're also working in our solutions as well to provide that experience. So we offloading that part as well. So we're trying to make, when you're starting a conversation or a video conference from your virtual machine, that actually that part is going on as a standard desktop. So we don't want to bring all that information through the VDI platform and then back to the other. So it's important to understand that, because experience is becoming even better for voice over IP. Oh, time for the demo.
So we want to do a short demo. If you haven't seen the pieces, we want to show you a little bit about RemoteFX, some of the pieces about Hyper-V and Server 2012, how it goes together. So we'll keep it short on the demonstration part. But just want to give you a quick...
Just very simple. I don't know how technical you want to get in this, but I just basically want to give you a flavor and touch. Oh,
wrong one. I'll bring it back.
Okay. So if you want to provide RemoteFX, for example, what do I need? Where I start from? Even for a proof of concept or something like that. So basically, just a few steps. You need to buy the hardware, obviously. You need to put on the server one of the graphic cards that we were showing before. It can be a K1, for example, for NVIDIA, if you want to, or K2. K2 is actually cheaper, I think. So you can...
K1 is cheaper, K2 is expensive. K1,
yes, but you can choose one you want, but that's the first requirement, obviously, for doing that. Then what is also required to have on your server, on your Hyper-V, is the second level address translation, magic word, but basically there are tools like the sysinfo tools, like this one.
It's that keyboard.
CoreInfo. And what you're looking for is just to see that it supports slot. What it's telling you is that the CPU, the server itself, the hardware, is supporting this. In terms of Intel, it's the... what's the name of the use? The EPT, the extended page table, and AMD calls it indexed table, something like that. Basically, what you want is, if you're using, you reusing hardware you have, you need to run this test to make sure that your hardware also is able to manage SLAT, because it's a requirement. So that's one. The second one is, you can run DX there, and that shows you two things what you're looking for. One is that you have DirectX 11 that is required for enabling RemoteFX, and the second one is that the driver that you're using, remember, you have a physical server, bring the server, install Windows 2012 on the server, and then you check, okay, I have SLAT, perfect. I have a graphic card, of course, but the driver on that graphic card, on that GPU, has to be WDDM, as you can see here, WDDM. That is important. So if you don't, any of those three starting points, if you make your checklist, if you don't have them, it won't work. So it won't provide RemoteFX it won't be available. So those are three, so we're sure we know that. So install Windows 2012, as I said, enable the Hyper-V role, reboot the machine, and once you have your Hyper-V up and running, you'll see here in the Hyper-V settings, this is what you now get. So you now have GPU power on your machine. So you'll see here we're running, this is a workstation actually, this is not even a server. We're running NVIDIA Quadro 4000, so you don't even need to go and buy, if you want to do a proof of concept, you don't need those very high-end graphic cards just for testing purposes. You can even run on this. And of course, you have to enable GPU with remote effects. So those are the from the server side, the things you have to take in account. So very simple. You don't need to do a lot of configuration or trickery there, or enabling or going into the PowerShell and activating things. That's it's required. So basically, again, driver, hardware, of course, and enabling that in within Hyper-V. So now if we go to the other screen.
Oh yeah, I can take care of that.
And show the, I want to show both. Because now,
oh, I had it.
Right.
There it is. So I'm going to give you an example of BYOD. So bring your own device. So we have an environment that we set up on this T1700 or something like that. And we forgot to bring a client. So how are we going to show you RDP? We can't show you the experience. We forgot to bring anything that had Windows 8 on it. So yes, we actually borrowed this this actual presentation box. It's a HP 6200, something along those lines.
This is there.
It's okay. It's okay. It's bring your own box. So we are going to use the actual presentation box that's down here, and we're going to connect to our environment. Right. So we actually have...
Yeah, if you bring the RemoteFX one first.
That's 106. So okay, we've actually remoted from this HP whatever into our environment over RemoteFX, so you can see we're using RDP, and we have the good experience indicated right there. And we're actually connected to a virtual machine, Windows 8, on that machine over there, delivered from a random device here at the trade show.
So let me just, I want to show here.
Go ahead.
Because we were checking on the server side, now we want to see how do I know that RemoteFX is actually running here on the virtual machine. And the difference if you've been working with, where's my mouse? It's here. Where's my device manager?
Yeah, you got a couple of settings.
There you go. So if you check the virtual machine itself, the display adapter, there you go. So you're running RemoteFX video card or virtual video card on the virtual machine itself. So this is the other end that you have to check to make sure that you're running RemoteFX. And also, if you see, I want to keep this up and running and go back to the other server. If you, John, can tell me
how. Go to the server?
Yes, back to my server. Just keep that open.
There you go.
Okay. And back to the Hyper-V.
Long mouse.
You know this is complex about bring your own device. You don't know which one is yours. If I double-click, that's the machine running RemoteFX. If I double-click, look, it says also on the console, on the Hyper-V console, you won't be able to see. It's different to if I double-click on any of the other machines not running RemoteFX, because it's saying you actually you cannot see from the console screen when RemoteFX is running on the machine. So there's another way you can test, you can make sure that RemoteFX and the 3D video adapter is running on the virtual machine. And before we go to the comparing both, I also wanted to give you a very quick overview on the remote desktop services solution itself on Windows 2012. Now, it's, in my opinion, I think it's a lot more easier than it used to be. So it's no longer, you don't need to have a lot of experience to provide this kind of solutions. It's very simple. It has wizards that can guide you through what type of solutions you want to go. So you can see it's also infrastructure oriented, if you want. So it helps you if you start from the beginning, you just go and say, I want to deploy a remote desktop services solution, and it will guide you, and it says you want to do it in one server, on three different servers, different roles, and it will be telling you, and you see even here we're not running the gateway role, but it shows in green, and you just click here, and it will guide you through how to configure that one. So it's really, really very simple. And And it's, you see the different roles in here, so you can check the different roles running. And if you just want to add a collection of, this is in terms of Microsoft, collections of shared desktops, published applications, or virtual desktops, all you need to do is just click in here and follow the steps. So for example, if you want to add some more, a virtualization host server is a Hyper-V server, so if you put a new server, you want to run the virtual machine from there. And if you want to create a virtual desktop collection, you go next, put a name, VDI. You can choose whether it's a pool collection, so a pool is a number of machines that you are dynamically assigning to different users. You need one, I give you one. When you finish, I recover that machine and give it to someone else. Whereas a personal virtual desktop, as the name says, it's for you. So that would be always, every time you connect, that would be the virtual machine running for you. You want that when you want to highly customize the virtual machine for that user. So you want to put your own software or configuration. So basically, you can go for a pooled solution, create a virtual machine. So see, you don't have to go to the Hyper-V and create the machines, etc. It's asking you what the server, the template that you're using for that. It would probably give me errors here because, see if that accepts, because it's asking, you need to sysprep the template. Once you finish, you configure you create a virtual machine, Windows 8, Windows 7, put the software the way you want, you create the machine. I would suggest you always tune the machine really well. There are some tricks, plenty of sites on the web that you can see how to optimize a client machine. And then once you have your template, you sysprep the machine, and you can provide also an unattended, as if you were imaging standard desktops, you can configure for different options, blah, 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 put some basic settings, and choose the OU that you're using on where you want those machines to go, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to go because that takes a lot of time, and it's not the idea, but just to give you a quick overview of how simple that is. And if once you have already your pools, your different collections, if you just want to publish applications, and this is also very interesting, is with terminal service, you had that in the past, but now with a more bring your own device kind of scenario, it's becoming more and more popular, these type of solutions, because if you're running a tablet, for example, you don't want to open from your tablet a whole Windows to open Excel. You just want to open Excel from there because it's more it's easier and better for the user. So all you want to do is to do a publish application. You just want to publish that application, and this is running from a shared server. So again, you remember those numbers we were giving you: 260 users from one server publishing applications. It's the same. So you get more density, a better cost-effective solution, and you can go for this kind of scenario. So you can publish remote apps, programs. Again, it will be asking you for a shared host server running that. You can see the different applications. Okay, I want to, I have already Excel, so let's go look for something else because it's discovering what is installed on the server. Whatever, system configuration. Go next, and just click on publish, and later on when you have published the application, you can always edit properties and decide parameters, or for example, who are the users allowed to see or to have access to this application, so you can assign different applications to different users, or also have more control over licensing and things like that, because you don't want just to give everything to everyone. So that's important. And now, back to our desktops. We want to show you the difference of, for example, video streaming on a virtual machine running RemoteFX and another virtual machine without RemoteFX. So this is the one without remote effects.
Yep. And this is why we talked about GPUs and why they're important, how they change the experience. So a lot of people have seen RDP in the past. I'm sure you've seen plenty of demos, and it probably looks something like this
video.
You want
to go full screen, yeah.
This is actually playing, and you can imagine from an end user experience perspective, not particularly good. Words aren't synced up, blocky. Not something you'd want to deliver down to an end user. And you can shrink the video and try to deliver a little bit better, but that's pretty much unwatchable. I think we can all agree that's unwatchable.
Yeah.
We don't want to show that to your end user.
And see the difference. There are two ways to try to make this better. You have a lot of information on the screen because you're rendering a lot of pixels, but also you bring in that, as I said, remotely. So you have to choose whether to reduce the quality and to be able to manage lower amount of information and bring in that faster, or you can just bring the whole information but less by removing, by losing some of the frames. So either way, the quality is it's lower. It's good.
I'll show you the video in a second. I forgot to mention, so we have a lot of people want to view 3D created content, AutoCAD, files, things like that. So we have a SOLIDWORKS drawing, and it's not going to load up for me. But we can actually deliver that content to those end users virtually. So if they want to just view a drawing, look at something they've created, that's very easy to do. You can rotate, and you can actually deliver a pretty good experience. I don't know if you're familiar with SOLIDWORKS, but over remote effects using a GPU, that's on a traditional virtual machine without a GPU. You wouldn't be able to deliver anything like this.
No way.
It would actually just break. But we can do 3D models, and of course.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this is not a touch screen, because with touch screen, you can even use the touch interface to do that. So
this won't be perfect. We didn't optimize the environment, but you get in the idea how much smoother the video is. The audio is much more synced up. If it were optimized, it'd be pretty much seamless.
But again, see, now you have a high resolution video with all quality, frames per second, you're getting there in a remote way, but also without losing frames. Or
the other piece, you actually see the difference in the two videos, is this one's showing a lot more information in the actual video. Just the quality of what it's showing is much, much higher.
Yeah.
So I can fire up both. I mean, the detail and the people and everything is much higher. This one's chopping a lot of information to try to catch up.
Yeah.
But I'm using my HP to deliver both of these, so there you go, remote effects experience.
And these are real videos downloaded from the internet.
That's right.
So no,
just like a user would do.
No special. And that was it.
That's the end of it. Yes.
Our demo. Well, to thank you, and if you have any questions or want to go more in deep, you're more than welcome to our booth as well.
Thank you very much. That's it. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yes.